Before we get started with this week's episode, we'd like to remind you folks that the Air Raid podcast is available at many places, including iTunes, the Stitcher Radio app for your smart device, CairoRadio.com, and the all-new Adore Network at Adore.fm. Let's get started with the episode. Well, hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 290 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Boom indeed, folks. Boom indeed. We've got a great, great, wonderful chat with David Dickinson, the man, the founder, the owner of Suicide Squeeze Records right here in Seattle. Sky is personally responsible for bringing some of my all-time favorite music into my head, or getting it distributed and into my hands as a young teen and as a growing adult, and still to this day. Love this label. Still putting out amazing, amazing records. They are this year celebrating their 20th anniversary, I believe in August, and they've got a number of things coming up to celebrate that. They are re-releasing all sorts of stuff from Elliott Smith, Modest Mouse, These Arms Are Snakes, Minus the Bear. The list goes on and on, folks. And we'll be talking with David Dickinson, getting pretty real. Sharing some stories about Elliott Smith and how he signed him to Suicide Squeeze for some one-offs, some singles that he was going to release. Kind of a funny story there. How he started a label. We do get into some of the specifics. Some people might not find this too interesting, but I found it absolutely fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. I always really admire people, and I say this to David during the chat, is that I always really admire people who take it by the balls, for lack of a better term, take it by the balls and really just run with an idea. To some extent, I have done this with this show. I have tried to. We're definitely not as popular or as financially solvent as a thing like Suicide Squeeze Records, but we're getting there, people. We're trying. But he's a guy who just, he loved music. He was never very good at playing it, but he wanted to be part of the scene. And so he created this record label to put out his friend's music, and it just kind of took off, man. And the guy is just a wonderful person, and I think you guys are really going to enjoy the episode, okay? We've got a couple of things to get to before we get into the chat here. And before we play some of our favorite tunes from Suicide Squeeze Records, I'm sorry, I've been having a couple drinks before I started this, and it's catching up with my tongue. All right? So everybody chill out. Everybody chill out. We've got an email to get to here, a bunch of emails concerning the health of my family. And I cannot thank you enough. For sending in your heartfelt condolences and things like that. Although, we did not reveal what's going on. Everybody has been absolutely wonderful. There is nothing wrong with me. Nothing wrong with me. It's just dealing with a family member, very close family member, dealing with some pretty serious health issues. And we're trying to respect their privacy. Of course, in this time, okay? So we're not going to be doing a lot of talking about that. But I do want to get to this email sent to us, which I thought it really, really touched my heart, and I want to read it for you guys right here. This is from listener Anna. I just wanted to drop you a quick email to say that what you are doing, your show, has filled my head with countless hours of wonderful conversations and introduced me to such amazing artists that I never knew of and never knew much about. I want to thank you on behalf of everyone that listens to Air Raid for continuing to do what you do. I am so sorry that your family is struggling with health issues right now, but if it's any consolation, just know that there are so many people out there that have grown to love you and the way you bring art and music to the surface for people like me to hear. I am not really a religious person, but I'm praying for you, or praying that you and your family turn out okay for whatever it is that you are dealing with. Listener Anna in Denmark. Frederiksberg, Denmark. Listener Anna, thank you so much for that email. That made me tear up a little bit. And I cried a little bit when I read it the first time, and I told myself I was going to keep it together, man. And I did not. I did not. But thank you so much. That's that really, really means a lot. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can do what Listener Anna did and email me at aaron@air-raid.net. We've been getting a bunch of requests for bands on the show. I got to tell you guys, though, I love getting these requests for bands. We told you last week about our buddy Jordan, who from Portland, Oregon, who likes to tweet at us with new bands that he finds out about. Like last week, Sioux Falls, he tweeted at us about that and had a chance to check them out. They're amazing. But I don't think they're coming up to Seattle anytime soon. So that's a problem. That's a problem. You know, we'll get to some of these, hopefully, in the future. So keep on sending those in. We really dig that. Let's see. And really quickly, if you are a band who wants to come on the show, you can email Elliot Shaw, our booking person, at booking@air-raid.net. So I'm not taking those anymore, okay? So it'd be more helpful if you guys could just book or send Ellie an email rather than me, because it'll get an answer a lot quicker. Okay, and then another iTunes review from from what seems to be a newer listener. This one comes from a guy or girl, I don't know, by the name of Jazzy Knight. I don't know why I thought that was a guy. I don't know why I thought that was a guy. I'm sorry. If you're a lady, I apologize, Jazzy Knight. It's a 4-star review. Hey man or lady, what the hell? No, 4-star. We'll take it, man. We'll take it. Posted by Jazzy Knight. I dig this podcast. Came across it while looking for GNR Guns N' Roses interviews, and what do you know? Duff, the King of Beers, McKagan, and Aaron bashing it out. Air Raid has a slew of great interviews from musicians, actors, comedians, and endless bombs of awesomeness fit for your earholes. Trust me, if you're looking for an hour of sanity to stop your weary head from spinning, look no further than the Air Raid podcast with Aaron Roden. I dig it, and so will you. Wow, rad. Jazzy Knight, thank you so much. And if you'd like to do what Jazzy Knight did, take the pledge, right? What we always tell you at the end of the show, take the pledge, tell your friends about the show, all right? Bring it up in conversation, go to iTunes and, rate and review the show. You don't have to review the show, but if you rate us, it really helps in bringing us up in the standings and helps get this show heard by more people, okay? So do that if you use iTunes. If you don't, just spread it around, spread the joy. Come and like us on Facebook. We're going to try to start doing more with the old Facebook page. So Facebook is really weird. It runs on this weird algorithm, where whenever we post something, not a whole lot of people see it because of the way Facebook works. So, you got to subscribe to the Facebook feed if you'd like to see that stuff. And if you do see it pop up, give us a little like on whatever it is, even if you're not going to listen to the episode, because if you guys like the posts that we put up there, and we post the show up there, of course, with the Spreaker link and everything. And if you see that, if you're a fan of the show, you may not want to listen to that certain episode, but please give it a like anyway, because more people will see it once you like it. Okay? I know that sounds weird. And it sounds maybe like I'm sitting on one knee trying to beg you guys to do this, which I am, actually. You can't see me right now, but I am on one knee. I'm on bended knee. I'm begging you. Share this shit on social media. All right? Okay. All right. Let's get into it, shall we? Let's go with our first musical break. This one of my favorite releases off of Suicide Squeeze Records. And you may remember we had Aaron Tate on the show. He was the drummer for Minus the Bear. And this album called Highly Refined Pirates was one of my favorite releases off of Suicide Squeeze Records. My favorite releases by Minus the Bear. This song is called Absinthe Party at the Fly Honey Warehouse. And we'll be right back with our guest, David Dickinson, founder and owner of Suicide Squeeze. Talking all sorts of stuff, man. Yeah, yeah. Right here on Air Raid. Right here in the backyard, okay? All right. Minus the Bear, Highly Refined Pirates, off of Highly Refined Pirates, Absinthe Party at the Fly Honey Warehouse. We'll be back in a moment with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears. Stay with us.
Number of years, played baseball in the minor leagues and
really?
College. Yeah.
No
yeah.
shit.
Yeah.
What college?
Arizona State.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that where you're from?
No. I actually moved around a lot just because my folks got divorced when I was younger.
Uh-huh.
But I've lived in the state of Washington for the majority of my life. I did live in Flagstaff, Arizona during my senior year of high school and then some community college in the Phoenix area.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what about baseball do you like? Please explain this to me.
Yeah, no, I just...
Every time somebody, like a lot of friends of mine,
yep.
really dig baseball.
Right, right.
I cannot, for life of me, get into the sport.
Okay.
It's like watching golf.
Okay.
For me. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
I apologize.
No, no, no. It's fine. I take no offense. For me, I just I find a comfort in it. I think that I guess just being around it for the majority of my life, it's,
yeah.
There's something about it that has a calming effect on me. I just I don't know. I kind of look at it like how some people, you know, meditate or something like that. I can just sit there and watch some baseball and zone out and kind of let any sort of stresses and troubles, you know, leave my mind for that period of time. And it's, you know, it's
yeah.
nice.
Yeah.
So
I can see that.
Right.
Like in a game like that, because a lot of time passes by.
It does, yeah.
You can just sit there and zone out to it.
You can,
right?
Yeah.
It's not like football,
right,
where there's like full contact.
Exactly.
And it's almost like a stress.
True.
Watching
yeah.
it the full
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
Right?
Now I hear you. I feel that stress actually when I watch football.
Yeah. Are you a full-on sports fan? Do you like other sports as well, or is it just baseball is the thing?
Baseball's a big thing for me. I do watch other sports. I watch basketball.
Yeah. But you didn't name a label after a play in basketball.
Yeah, exactly. I guess I don't like it enough. football I've gotten into more recently. But yeah, baseball's kind of the number one, and I will watch other stuff. I'm not really those three sports, I guess, I see myself watching, but outside of that, nothing else really grabs my attention
yeah, yeah.
sports-wise. So.
So how long of your, well, how much of your life was your dad playing baseball?
When I was born, he was playing in the minor league system for the Minnesota Twins, so I was actually born in Lynchburg, Virginia, which they had a minor league team there.
Really?
At the time, yeah.
Wow.
And so he did that. I believe he was in the minor leagues for 8 years. And I don't recall much of it. I think he probably retired, I want to say, when I was three to 4 years old.
Oh, okay. So you were pretty young.
Young, for sure, yeah.
Okay.
He went from that straight into coaching baseball at the time at Western Washington University, which had a baseball program at the time.
Oh, okay.
And then from there over to Washington State, and then from Washington State to the University of New Mexico, and then from there to the Mariners minor league system, and then he's coached in the minor leagues for my whole life. He was the assistant hitting coach for the Houston Astros.
Wow.
Also during that time. And
so did you, as a kid, did you get to like go to the fields and stuff and like be in the dugout and
yeah, exactly.
do that whole thing?
Yeah. Yeah. Bat boy and just kind of tagged around. He would take me on trips, on road trips, but also take me for summers when he'd be like coaching in different places. I would go there. When I was 15, 16, I would, was the clubhouse attendant for the San Bernardino, team, which was the Mariners, minor league affiliate at the time. Yeah.
Okay.
So I would, you know, basically get the clubhouse in order. I would take the uniforms to have them, to the dry cleaner or the to have
how old are you laundry. when you're doing that
16 I guess 15 16 yeah.
Was it like the grossest job on the planet, like are those just like, I mean, dirty jock? I'm expecting like dirty jock straps,
right? Well, yeah, they put all their stuff, basically they put all the washables like that type of stuff in these little bags and just throw
so
them in a hamper.
To
I don't have to touch any of it, thankfully. The uniforms, yeah, I did those. I would have to sort through, just kind of put them in a pile, and then I'd take them, like I said, to the laundromat. They would wash, drop them off to be washed, and then pick them up and hang everything back in the lockers.
Yeah. So I don't want you to like say any names.
All right,
but was there any accidents? Like, were there any accidents? Like, some of the players maybe have a rough night.
Not that I'm aware of, thankfully. Okay, maybe good. Maybe I blacked out.
Maybe
a little
they just
bit,
burn but, those.
Yeah,
it's like every kid in elementary school. They just leave it in the toilet.
Let's hope so. Yeah,
David Dickinson.
Yeah,
owner, founder of Suicide Squeeze Records. Yes, welcome sir. To the backyard, sir.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, dude, this is a big a true honor for me. Because I have been listening to Suicide Squeeze Records, releases on Suicide Squeeze Records for probably as long as you guys have been around, about 20 years.
I appreciate that. Thank
you. Yeah, yeah. And you're celebrating this year.
We are.
2016 with the 20th anniversary.
Yes.
Which coming up in August.
Correct.
Officially.
Yep.
Which we were actually supposed to be doing this talk. At that time.
Close enough, huh?
Nathan, your PR guy, going to be kind of mad. But you know what? It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah. All right with it.
Yeah, congratulations, man. That's a huge, huge feat.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm very proud of it. And yeah, I appreciate you having me on to talk about it.
Yeah, dude. So I think the first thing that I ever heard on Suicide Squeeze, and I think the first thing you guys ever released, was the 7-6-4 Hero Modest Mouse Split.
Right. That was it wasn't the first thing that we ever released. It was our eighth release, but, you know.
Can you get a little closer to that microphone? And you can move that thing all around. It's not going to make a noise. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It was that was our eighth release, actually.
Oh, it was?
Yeah. Yeah. Our first release was from 7-6-4 Hero. It's a 7-inch Now You're Swimming was the A side.
Okay.
And and from there, you know, we did a Modest Mouse 7-inch as our third release, and then the split EP there as the eighth one.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So 7-6-4 Hero was the first band that you ever had on Suicide Squeeze.
Yes, correct.
Were they friends of yours or something like that? How did you know those guys?
Yeah, actually, my wife was the drummer in 7-6-4 Hero.
Oh, no shit.
And so...
Well, you see, right here, we were looking at a blank page just before we started. I showed Dave.
Yes.
David, how much research I did. It's just a blank page of paper.
Yeah. You put a lot of effort into it.
I did. I figured, hey, look, you know what? I figured I was like, I've been listening to Suicide Squeeze releases for 20 years.
Yeah.
I know enough about it.
Sure.
I just don't know about the guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
That's okay.
We'll make it through.
Don't fucking judge me in my own house, man.
No judgment here.
So your wife was the drummer for 7-6-4 Hero. Did you guys meet while she was, I mean, obviously she probably wasn't your wife.
Right.
Yet. Right?
Right. Well, we met...
this was all a ruse. The whole record label was a ruse to get this girl.
Yeah.
Right?
That would be a nice story. But, yeah, we were actually married when she started playing in the band.
Oh, okay.
I met her when we first moved to Seattle. When I first moved to Seattle, she was in another band that practiced at the house that I rented a room at.
Oh, cool.
And so... after a couple of years, we ended up getting together, and actually when we were first married, we moved to Hawaii and lived there for a while. But when we came back, then she started playing music with John Atkins in 7-6-4 uh-huh. Hero. And I had been a big fan of his band prior to 7-6-4 Hero, which was a band called Hush Harbor.
Right.
And I actually met John because we worked together at a pizza place in the U District called Hot Lips. And so he had, he'd started this band Hush Harbor, and I would go see him play house shows down at Lake Union Pub and mm-hmm. Different places around Velvet Elvis downtown in Pioneer Square.
Yeah.
And so just a big fan of what he did. And then, I was happy that they, that Polly started playing with them and that they were able to do 7-6-4 Hero. For me, it was, if anything, that was what, you know, got me into doing the label, just being around them, being able to go on tour, with them.
Were you ever a musical guy?
Not
did you play any instruments?
No. I definitely tried, but I just wasn't gifted in that way. And so for me, that was kind of like my end to just like, you know, being a big fan of music and being around those different people. I guess I wanted to find a way to be involved.
Yeah.
And that you know.
I'm kind of the same way. Like, I surround myself with all these instruments that you see behind me.
Yeah.
To make it seem like I know how to play them well.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, I just remembered what I was going to say.
Okay.
but we'll bring that up later.
Okay.
No, but, yeah, I mean, yeah, being a part of the scene was a thing for you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think just, wanting to find a way to get, you know, deeper involved, as opposed to just going to shows, which obviously I was a fan of doing anyways,
sure.
just trying to get out and see as much music as is humanly possible. So,
right. Right.
Yeah.
That's cool, man.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, take me back a little bit. Like, where did your love for music start?
I mean, I've always had, I guess, had a love for music, in some shape or form, growing up. I know, like, you know, I was, super into skateboarding,
uh-huh.
and, mostly just at that time getting into, like, whether it was like Thrasher compilations or early hip hop, like that type of stuff. I guess prior to that, even, I was more of a fan of, just in terms of where I was growing up and in Pullman, Washington, the music I listened to, like, you know, for instance, going to see Van Halen at the basketball arena there,
yeah,
or,
yeah.
you know, listen to AC/DC.
So were you always kind of a rock kid?
Yeah, I guess so. I think that had a lot to do with, the fact that, that's what, you know, just my group of friends were into listening to, and it mm-hmm. wasn't, I didn't think it was like, you know, definitely more rock than, metal type stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
But just, I don't know, I guess finding that the melody in like a rock song or something like that was, you know, was important to me.
Yeah.
I think that was a big thing.
So what are we talking, like, mid 80s, late 80s?
Yeah. Mid 80s, I guess, uh-huh. at that point.
Yeah. Little banana. Skateboard.
Yeah. Yeah. We actually had, it had moved into I guess what would be considered a regular size skateboard. Now.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Much wider. They were much wider.
They
back
were,
then,
they were, God. Yeah.
They felt so much more stable.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. I definitely remember the banana board and going down uh-huh. the hill. The first, Jesus. Yeah, the first ones.
So. I would never stand up on it.
Like, really?
It would just, yeah, it was too rocky for me.
Okay.
Like, I've got terrible balance.
Yeah.
I actually learned how to surf in college.
Okay.
And we would surf on the Washington coast. We'd
right
take
on.
Trips out there.
Yeah.
But the skateboard always escaped me.
Yeah.
You
okay.
know, I could never do it.
Yeah.
And I think it was mostly out of fear.
Right, right.
Like breaking something.
Yeah, yeah.
You
I
know,
can see
all
that.
my friends back in the 80s, they all had broken arms.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I had never broken a bone because I was smart enough to stay away from the goddamn skateboards.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I never broke any bones skateboarding.
No?
I did on my bike, I broke my wrist.
Oh, really?
And that was just like hauling down a hill, and I hit some gravel when I was trying to stop.
Oh yeah,
so
yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah, yeah,
that'll definitely do it. Too,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, exactly.
So got were your parents? Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So were your parents? Were your parents big into music? Like, what were they listening to? What was influencing young little David Dickinson?
I mean, my dad, I remember was. I feel like was. I don't feel like. I know he was like kind of. Country when I could best remember, and then mm-hmm. or when I was, you know, really young, that's what I remember him listening to. I remember then, you know, David Bowie was something that was listened to. Even as I got older, I remember like middle school, my dad had like kind of a heavy rock phase.
Your dad sounds awesome.
Yeah, he's a good person for sure. Yeah. Yeah. But he, I just remember we spent a summer in together, a couple summers, but one in Anchorage, Alaska. He was coaching up there. And I just, for whatever reason, I just remember him getting into like heavy rock and
yeah.
and metal stuff for a while. But
yeah,
wasn't, you know, now these days he's more like a 50s, 60s, like doo-wop, style really? Stuff. Is,
he went back.
Is, yeah, he did. He reverted. Yeah. Yeah, back to that. And so my mom was always kind of just like, I guess, like radio and like soft rock type
yeah, yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was probably very similar.
Yeah. Yeah.
To my parents as okay. well. It was a lot of Mannheim Steamroller during the holidays.
Yeah.
And yeah, a lot of just like, God, I remember when the 10,000 Maniacs Unplugged album came out.
Oh, yeah.
Fuck, man. That was
a hit.
Like, big hit. Big hit in the Roden house. Yeah. Yeah, it was every Saturday morning at about, when did that album come out? What would you say? Like 1992, 93 maybe?
Yeah, that's what I would guess, right around there.
Yeah, early 90s yeah, that album came out. Yep. So it was played in my house from 19 whenever it came out.
Yeah.
Up until like finally when I was able to stop hearing it was 1999.
Yeah.
When I moved out.
There you go. You were able to escape it.
And it's still in the CD player. Yeah. Every time I go back to mom's house, exactly. It's still there, man.
Yeah, bring back those sweet memories.
That Michael Bolton.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what.
Beautiful stuff.
That's right. And then I would put on like Sonic Youth Sister or something like that, you know, and then it would just, you know, parents hated it.
Yeah.
Absolutely hated it.
Yep.
Yeah. I never had like, whenever I find a guy like you that is deeply into sports.
Right.
And deeply into what I would consider like my taste in music.
Sure.
Like really indie, cool shit.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
It just seems so weird to me.
Yeah.
Because where I grew up, like, you were either into sports or you were either into music.
Right.
Or that's how I perceive the world.
Sure.
You know, at some point.
I think there was a lot of that for me growing up as well, where I kind of, I don't know, I was able to straddle that line somehow and, you know, be, like, into sports or you know, particularly baseball, but also, like, skateboarding and music and just kind of have, like, you know, the situation where just kind of had friends on both sides, you know,
different groups.
Yeah. Different
were you
groups.
Like a, you were like a slider.
Yeah.
You could slide in between them.
I guess so. Yeah. Yeah. I don't really, I went to a couple different high schools, like I said, just cause we moved around a lot.
Yeah.
And I never really had any issues. I know a lot of people are like, oh, high school was this terrible experience or, you know, they felt like they had to deal with a bunch of BS. But for whatever reason, I enjoyed my time and the people that I met and the friends that I had there, whether it was through baseball or through, like I said, through skateboarding or whatever. So
was it hard doing that, though? I mean, having to like pick up and move to a different place, like I imagine that there were probably some instances where you were moving like mid school year or something right?
Fortunately, no mid school year.
Yeah.
But three different high schools, and I feel like
three different high schools.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a lot, man.
It is. The first, my first experience with high school was at a place where I'd lived, which was in Pullman. So I'd gone through middle school there. And so I had my freshman year and then from there to Boise. And that was kind of a little bit tough. At the beginning, just kind of trying to find, like, my mom was super cool in that she was like, you know, she actually asked around like, oh, my son likes to do these things and my daughter likes to do these things. But where would be the best high school to go to and did enough
research.
Yeah. Did enough research to where we ended up in a place that was great.
That's nice.
I went to Boise High School, which was in downtown Boise. We were in Idaho at the time and, was able to meet a bunch of great people. And so it's just like, I guess just getting in there and actually like meeting the folks. But once I had that set of friends it was great. And then, from there, I went to Flagstaff, Arizona, and that was, I didn't really have any troubles fitting in there. I think.
Well, it sounds like you sound like a pretty easygoing guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And it sounds like you guys had moved so much as a kid, like it probably like became almost commonplace where you're like, okay, this is what I need to do to meet new people.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, so when did your parents split up?
Early on, I guess when I was in third grade, they divorced.
Really?
Yeah.
So were they moving together? Were you guys all moving almost as a unit though?
No. My parents, like I said, they divorced in third grade. We were both living we were all living in Pullman, Washington. Both my parents worked at Washington State University. And so we stayed living in that town because that's where both folks were. I would spend most of the time my mom, I would say, had, I don't know what the custody agreement was, but we spent the majority of our time living at my mom's place. Then we'd spend weekends with my dad or summers with my dad, like stuff like that.
Okay.
Up until he moved to Albuquerque to take a job at University of New Mexico. And when that happened, it kind of like freed us up to move out of there. And, so we moved, my mom's parents had recently retired from the Bay Area and moved to Boise. And so that's why we ended up there.
Gotcha.
So
both parents were kind of plop, 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 plop.
Yeah. Well, my mom, I mean, she moved from Pullman to Boise and she still lives there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
She still lives there. I went to spend my senior year of high school in Flagstaff with my dad. And then, you know, just being down in the Phoenix area for community college, like I said. So,
Is that tough? Do you remember it?
I remember it. Yeah. Yeah. Tough.
The split,
the divorce.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really tough. I think that, it was, you know, a situation where it seemed like it was the best thing for them to get a divorce, honestly.
Yeah.
But it definitely didn't make things easy. And
no.
There was, you know, the stuff with my dad and, you know, wanting me, his thought was that I would live with him and my sister would live with my mom, but I wanted to live with my mom, you know,
mm-hmm.
as
yeah.
well.
Yeah.
And so there was this period of where my mom was finding a place to live and I was staying with my dad and I didn't want to live with him, but I didn't want to like, you know, I guess I didn't want to like bum him out either, hurt his feelings.
Yeah.
And so it's just, you know, I don't recall exactly how it all worked out, but it was tough. Like, I remember like, you know, it was difficult.
Yeah.
And I did eventually end up living with my mom, like I said, and still spending time with my dad, but it was just all pretty, pretty awkward. And I mean, I remember the first time like meeting some woman that my dad had started dating, meeting this woman that my dad was dating. It was, I just remember like, I didn't even like look at her during breakfast. I don't think
I even
said a word to her. Yeah.
Just kind of a really weird, awkward situation.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, just little stuff like that. I mean, I would imagine that all divorced kids, I guess.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, go through.
Yeah. I've seen it in movies.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I watched one last night.
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah, so...
Well, that sounds kind of rough, man. Like,
yeah.
For a kid, yeah. How old are you in third grade? What like, nine?
I guess, yeah, something like that. Eight or nine. Yeah.
Like, that's total mind fuck.
Yep. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. I think, you know, I can remember, you know, my dad, like, crawling into bed with me in the middle of the night, like, you know, being upset about it.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, I'm sorry this is happening and crying and stuff like that. But like I said, I mean, they just weren't good together. So
Yeah. A lot of fighting.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's better.
Yeah. It seems better. It's better off that they got divorced, I felt like. And, you know, they're both happy now.
That's so good. Yeah. Is it amicable now?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it has been for a while. So
good.
Yeah, it's good.
Did you go through that thing too, where, like, you know, the parents are trying to, you go visit dad and he's like buying you all sorts of shit?
Yeah.
A lot of gifts.
I don't really remember the gift stuff. I do know that we did have this trip, when my dad, remarried. We'd go on this trip every Thanksgiving for a number of years. You know, my sister and I were still in high school, like as middle school. And maybe she was, I don't even know if she was, I think that she was in middle school, but she could have still been in elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really recall, but where we would go to for these extended trips to Hawaii around Thanksgiving with my dad and my stepmom.
What island?
Miranda. Well, that's the thing. We would always go to a different spot. So we checked out all the islands, but then we would end on Oahu. We would always end there for the last couple of days.
Nice.
And straight on Waikiki in Honolulu.
Yeah, man. Beautiful
and,
over there.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that they did that because, that we did that because a lot of the time, we would be exploring places that were less populated. And I think like, oh, the kids probably want to,
they want to be around,
go
something.
See some shops and do whatever, like that type of thing.
Yeah.
So
the first time my parents took me to Hawaii, and my brother to Hawaii, and they took us to Kauai.
Oh, right on, yeah.
And, like, rented a house out in the frickin' jungle.
Yep.
You know, just kind of away from the beach.
Yep.
There's this road on Kauai, and I don't know what side of the island on. I want to say it's on the south side.
Okay.
But it comes to a dead end.
Yeah.
And it's a beach called, I believe it's called, it's almost like a lagoon or something.
Okay.
What is it called? K-A, maybe?
All right.
K.A. Beach? Yeah. I can't remember. But it was, and there was this little house kind of nestled right at this dead-end road that was in some sort of like Elvis movie.
Right on.
And it was just totally overgrown, like the jungle was taking back over there.
Yeah.
And like you could kind of walk up to it and stuff
and
take a peek inside.
Right on.
You know. But that was my only fond memory of that trip because there was nothing on that island for a kid to do.
Right.
Right. Except for swim, which is great.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Kids need some sort of stimulation.
Yeah, they really do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember one of our first trips was to Kauai as well. And I remember like, oh, there's a gecko in our room. And it's just like seeing like nothing around.
Uh-huh.
I feel like renting a car was like, there's like three cars in a lot and you just pick one out or something, you know, just stone ages basically.
And it's like the owner's car, personal car.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that was our thing. We just go to the beach, sit on the beach and it's like, oh, I'm burnt. And it's just like, oh, you just got to like work through it. Keep, you know, stay in the sun.
Yep. There you go.
So that was that.
Yeah. Well, let's do this. Let's take our second musical break and then we'll come back. We'll get back into the music conversation.
Okay.
How's that sound?
Sounds great.
All right. Be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears with special guest this week, David. Damn it.
Sorry.
Do I need to apologize for that?
You don't.
Okay, good. DD of Suicide Screams Records. Be right back. Stay with us. Organize an overthrow. You could give away what you barely own. It's true. I can get you down. You're already down. I can get you. You can't give I always remember thinking of 764 Hero as having probably the best, the greatest name that was taken from something, from like a highway sign that could ever have been made.
Right. Yeah.
764 Hero, for people who don't know, was the number you would call if you saw a litter bug on the highway.
I think it was a carpool.
Oh, was
violator.
It carpool?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. It wasn't even litter. It was carpool.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. Is that still in existence? Do you know?
I don't.
764 Hero.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it is.
I love that.
Yeah.
There's so many. There's, it's like, be a hero.
Yeah.
Rat on somebody who's cheating in the carpool lane.
Yeah, narc someone out. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That was the greatest thing, man. Was that just a Washington thing? Do you know?
As far as I know, as far as I'm aware,
I guess
it
would have to be, right?
Yeah.
Because it would have one area code.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. As far as I know, I never saw it out on the road anywhere else. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's fast forward. We ended our first segment, kind of talking about your life, your childhood.
Mm-hmm.
So you make it out here to Seattle.
Right.
You start dating this woman who's a kick-ass drummer in a really rad band.
Yeah.
And you have an idea to start a label.
Right.
Why?
Well, like I said, there was the...
Very open-ended question.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of it is, you know, once 764 Hero started, I was able to go on some tours with them. And
right.
I was meeting a bunch of different people in the music scene here in Seattle. And like I said, I just wasn't really gifted in the music playing department.
Right.
And so just looking for a way, kind of trying to find my way in life. Honestly, like what's my next move going to be?
Yeah. How old were you at the time?
It's early 20s.
Okay.
Want to say 23-ish, 22, 23.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I guess 22. Just.
You're trying to figure it out.
Yeah,
you're
trying
a normal 23-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it's like, oh, what am I going to do? I know that I'm passionate about music.
Uh-huh.
You know, if I'm meeting all these great people and these great bands, it would be nice to try and find a way to get involved and in the scene and also, you know, beyond and see what I can do with this thing. And so, of course, with 764 Hero being a band, they were actually... they had released a 7-inch, I think, on that point on Up Records.
Right.
Was their first release.
Right. Another local Seattle outfit.
Yeah, great label.
Mm-hmm. They put out some of the first Built to Spill.
Exactly. As well. The first Built to Spill LP, the first couple Modest Mouse LPs.
Yeah.
Quasi.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, lots of great stuff. Chris was, yeah. Chris was, you know, a great person, great label person.
Yeah.
He's very helpful to myself when I started doing Suicide Squeeze. He was someone that I could talk with, and he was always happy to help answer any questions that I might have.
Yeah. And unfortunately, he passed away almost 10 years ago, I would think, right?
Yeah. I mean, at least. I think it's actually been longer than
that.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just, you know, obviously with Polly being my wife and John being a good friend of mine, I asked them if they would do a 7-inch and they did. And so that was,
your wife can't really say no, right?
Yeah. Like... I mean, she could, it would be a bummer. Would have been a bummer if she did, but yeah. So yeah, they,
I can't even imagine what that night would have been like.
Yeah. Yeah. Would have been
who
rough.
Sleeps on the couch that night?
Yeah, exactly. Her.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, no. So they were, you know, they were nice enough to allow me to do it, and that kind of got me into it and just started.
So what was the first kind of thought about this though? It's like, okay, well, I wanna do something to contribute to this scene.
Right.
I wanna be involved with it somehow. I love these people. I wanna help them.
Right.
And I'll make a label.
Right.
All right. Make a label.
Yeah.
What the fuck do you do from there? Like, how does that even, like, I'm always amazed by people who have an idea and then just follow through with it.
Right, right.
You know, because I'm a very cautious person especially when it comes to starting like a business or something.
Right,
like that.
Right.
Like, I mean, we're starting a label. Obviously, sure. you have people like you said, Chris with Up Records.
Right.
People to kind of, you know, ask questions and stuff like that.
Right.
At that time, though,
mm-hmm.
like the music that you wanted to put out,
right?
Not the biggest, most popular music.
Correct.
Especially in the Seattle scene.
Right.
We're talking about early 90s.
Sure.
And at that time, for lack of a better term, I hate using the word grunge, but
mm-hmm.
that's what you use to describe that type of music that was coming out of Seattle.
Sure.
You're trying to start something that, you know, didn't have a huge audience. You're trying to start a business. Of course, you're 23, so
right.
you're a little bit naive.
Yeah, definitely naive. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, even just going to other labels and trying to, like, you know, glean information from these people.
Right.
How do you even do something like that? Like, because it seems like to me that other labels would be like, I'm not going to fucking help you.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I don't want competition.
Yeah. You would think that, but I mean, Chris was just such a great person.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he was kind of my go-to.
Yeah.
And a lot of that was, a lot of that had to do with the fact that obviously he had that relationship with, prior to 764 Hero with Hush Harbor,
you okay.
know, he'd released stuff for John, and then, you know, putting out the 7-inch for 764 Hero, it felt like, you know, he had just become like kind of a part of the family, like part of the crew. And so it was easy enough to go and talk with him. I didn't really have relationships outside of
bands
of Up Records.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You know, as far yeah. as like people to talk with, I think eventually, you know, down the road, I got to having conversations with like K Records and Kill Rock Stars and,
right.
you know, other right. area labels. But Chris was really the only one that I felt comfortable enough with at that time going and talking with.
Well, I can imagine that it's very hard to feel comfortable to talk Why is his name is slipping my mind. K Records.
Calvin Johnson.
Calvin.
Yeah.
Yeah. He seems like somebody that would make me nervous.
Right, right. Yeah, I'd never really have had a lot. I hear what you're saying. I never really had too many in-depth conversations with Calvin. In fact,
yeah.
the way that I was introduced to that whole situation was through Isaac in Modest Mouse.
Oh, okay.
So he said, oh, I bet Kay would distribute your stuff. And, you know, he had a relationship with Calvin, an
right,
existing
right.
relationship. And so he kind of hooked that up. But I think at the time, as far as conversations were concerned, a lot of my direct contact for distribution and just that whole, and talking about Kay and that whole thing was through Candace Peterson, who was a partner of his
gotcha.
At the time
gotcha.
Of Calvin. So.
So, I mean, this thing starts to take off
yeah.
a little bit. When did that become a reality?
I think, I mean, honestly for me, I felt like, oh, we're making, you know, we're making good strides with putting out these 7-inches. We're able to sell 3 of them and repress and,
yeah.
It felt like it was kind of becoming a thing in the Northwest, but I don't really feel like I ever thought necessarily that it's like, oh, this is, you know, this is gonna, I'm actually going to be able to make this,
a thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. My job, yeah. you know,
right. I would imagine you're still working.
Yeah, exactly. I was, yeah.
Other jobs
yep.
at this point. Right?
Yeah, still working jobs and just putting out stuff like as the money comes in, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like a very slow release schedule,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
Basically looking at like, oh, do like a couple records a year, you know,
yeah.
depending on how things sell and saying records, not even full lengths, just
yeah.
EPs mostly, singles. And so, yeah, I think once for me, once I got our first exclusive distribution deal, which was with this company called Nail, which was based down in Portland. It's not around anymore, but the type of deal that we had with them was a P&D deal where they paid for the production up front,
okay,
and then distribute it, just recoup their costs, and then, you know, pass through.
Well, that's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, yeah.
They
pass through, you know, our share of the income after taking their distribution cut.
Yeah.
And so was able to basically to reissue some of the our early vinyl only releases and get some other releases into production and and just
stuff
kinda,
like Elliott Smith and
exactly. Like and the Modest Mouse 7-6-4 Hero split, and just kind of like, so when, you know, CDs were kind of, you know, they were a big deal.
Sure.
And so we were able to stockpile some cash from doing that deal, and we actually only stayed there for a year and then went to this company, Mordam Records, which is a big independent distributor at the time.
So this whole time, you're basically, it's just like baby steps almost.
Yeah, exactly.
You have, and you're not, you're fully unaware of things are going well or things are going bad. You're just doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously.
Did you love the process?
Yeah, I love the process. Yeah. For sure. I still love the process. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it wouldn't be around anymore if you didn't.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know, man. It's just like, I'm very thankful for what I do. And so it's like, all right, well, let's see. It's just like, it was baby steps in getting to where it is. But I think it's just like, when you operate an independent label with like no outside funding, and you're putting out bands that you love the music and not because you think that they're going to sell records. And it's just, you know, it's always going to be baby steps. I feel like, it's like, sure. Things, a couple bands will take off. And that's, you know, that's great, but it's, there's also those bands that don't, but
Now, is this something that it's like, you were obviously, you're acting as your own A&R guy,
right? Yep.
So you're going out and you're seeing shows that are, you know, acts that are coming through Seattle and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And just approaching people and saying, hey, I'd love to put something out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of yours.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that how the Elliott Smith thing came around?
Yeah. The Elliott Smith thing, actually, I was just a big fan of his ever since he put out, you know, his first record on Cavity Search, Roman Candle, a big record.
That is a great record.
Yeah. It's a big record for me. And so kind of when I start, that came out, you know, before I started Suicide Squeeze. And so I would go and see him play. I mean, I remember going to, you know, lots of shows around here, any that I could, that he was playing. And, you know, like see him at Weathered Wall with my wife, and he's playing to like, you know, 20 people or something like that, 25 people. But it's like, kind of once I started Suicide Squeeze, it was like, well, that's definitely like kind of like a wish list artist.
Did you know him?
I didn't know him at the time. No. We had mutual friends. I actually, was around him, I guess it was the first tour that the first West Coast tour that 7-6-4 Hero did, was, some shows on their own, but they also, then met up with the Spinanes.
Oh yeah.
The band that was on Sub Pop, and hooked up with them for some shows. And, at the time they had expanded from Spinanes had expanded from a duo, into a quartet, and, the bass player was Elliott's girlfriend.
Oh, okay.
And so he had been like out doing shows, but then he ended up meeting up with them in California. So we're all kind of around, and I would, you know, obviously have conversations with them, but they weren't like in depth at all. Just how are you doing today kind of thing.
Sure.
That's about it. And funnily enough, I was just really like, I was such a fan of his that it was, you know, I was having a difficult time asking him.
Was it like a nerve wracking experience?
It was,
to get him to,
It was so nerve wracking that honestly, the way that it ended up working out was, Polly, my wife, she's just like, oh, I'll just ask him if you're so nervous about it. And she did. And, and he's like, yeah, I'd love to.
Yeah.
And so that's how the Division Day 7-inch came about. Uh-huh. I mean, that was, you know, this is like mid 90s, like, you know, I guess 96, 97-ish. I can't remember when he agreed. I want to say it was 90, 96.
So but, wait, that's around the same time that the Good Will Hunting movie came out.
Well,
right?
that was actually, it's close, but it's, that was actually maybe a couple, I want to say maybe a year, at least a year later.
Okay, so 98, when Miss Misery like made it onto that and won, you know, basically an Oscar for it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he...
Or performed at the Oscars.
He performed, yeah. Right. Yeah. And so, yeah, it was... I don't know. I mean, that was obviously really nice timing. We've sold and continue to sell tons of those...
Sure.
Singles.
Sure.
But it's just more so just the fact that we were able to do it is what's so exciting to me. Like, regardless of any of that stuff, it's just, he's just such an important artist in my life that, you know, that it's just an honor being able to release music for him, even in such a limited capacity.
Sure. I can see that. Do you form a lot of, like, close relationships with the artists that are on your label?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's that's important to me. I mean, I want to work with good people and people that I consider friends.
Yeah.
And so I do feel like I have strong relationships, with everyone that we work with, and even folks that we've done one-offs with. Some of them are more about business as far as like the one-off relationships are concerned.
Black Keys.
Yeah, exactly.
Come to mind with something like that.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And that was just like, kind of like, I mean, I know that I've met those guys and know them or whatever, but that's more of just like friends of friends. Like, they're friends with this band 6 Part 7 that we worked with for a number of years, and they all grew up in Akron, Ohio together. And so, you know, we were just kind of brainstorming 6 Part 7. Al from 6 Part 7 and I were brainstorming on releases, and that's how that one came about.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah.
You know, that's like, at this point it's like, oh, you know, business managers and management and that type of stuff. But anyone that's, you know, that I consider like a Suicide Squeeze artist, that's, you know, put out, even whether it's a full length or multiple full lengths with us, I definitely consider a friend and feel like
that's cool.
Good relationships. Yeah.
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 It must've been a pretty devastating blow when Elliot, Smith killed himself.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just such a shame, just because of what a talented person that he is and you know, what a good person that he was. And so,
Have you seen the documentary?
Heaven Adores You?
Yeah.
I haven't
seen that yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was well done. There weren't a lot of new details.
Sure.
I didn't feel but it was, you know, it was great to see and it's interesting, definitely worthwhile. I would suggest checking it out.
Yeah. I mean, that guy's musical career was just absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, I was a big fan of Heat Miser.
Yeah.
You know,
totally.
And oh God, just his voice and how he layered it.
Yeah.
When he recorded and stuff like that is something that I have tried to emulate in the past.
Right.
Recording my own music.
Yeah.
Huge inspiration.
Yeah.
Huge inspiration.
Yeah, I agree. I think, I don't know. It's just when you think about his catalog of work, you know, sure, like, there's some B-side type material, but you don't really write a bad song, you know? It's just like, that's what's such a shame to me, is to think about, like, everything that's been missed by him for music fans out there. And then, of course, for his close friends that, you know, missing out on such a great person. It's
brutal.
It is brutal.
Yeah. So... Fast forwarding here a little bit, and I know we're jumping around like timelines like mad in this conversation, but you guys have had a very great run.
Thank you.
You've had bands like Elliott Smith doing singles with you guys, mm-hmm. to bands like Minus the Bear, one of my favorite records that came out on Suicide Squeeze, which we were talking about in the front of the house.
Yeah.
Highly Refined Pirates.
Yeah.
That I basically turned into my mom.
Yeah.
And would play that record over and over and over. And
yeah.
Something about it.
Yeah.
To this day. Still gets me so fired up. I just love it.
It's
so
a great
much.
Record. Yeah. Yeah, that was the first one for us that I felt like really took off sales wise.
Really?
Yeah. And I just, that whole relationship with that band has been great, really important to the label.
Yeah.
Played a large role in the success of the label. And yeah, it's just, it was amazing to see them. I mean, their first show was a record release show for the first EP that we did with them, the Gigantic EP, which is pretty crazy. And then, you know, being able to work with them all through these years has been a pleasure.
Yeah. Members of Botch.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Who would have known that the members of Botch would form to make like a kind of like a more poppy record?
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yep.
I remember this is what I wanted to start out with when we started our conversation is that
sure.
I was in bands in college.
Yeah.
And this guy by the name of Michael Cooper
mm-hmm.
moved to Ellensburg
okay.
and he had this band Roy.
Yep.
Right. And they want to start to play shows over there. And so a friend of ours, Scott Abrams, who owned a bar called mm-hmm. the Liquid Lounge over there.
Yeah.
Was like, well, hey, Aaron, you got to come over. You got to hear this band, Roy. Yeah. I want him to play a show with you guys.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, how long is their set?
Yeah.
30 minutes.
Yeah.
I was like, oh man, we can't do that. Like we're going to open for them. No way. Yeah. Fuck that. Yeah. We've got an hour long set. We can play for an hour. We can jam, you know?
Yeah.
And so we set the show up and we have Roy.
Yep.
Who I had no idea who these guys were at the time. Ben Varelin.
Right.
And his brother who was the singer of Botch, and then Brian
Dave.
Cook.
Yeah, Brian Cook.
Brian Cook on guitar,
mm-hmm.
who was the bass player of Botch, I think, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
And then Michael Cooper who played bass. Mm-hmm. And fuck. These guys open up for us, right? And I'm in this little, like, indie rock kind of jam band, a la, like, Built to Spill with really, really terrible lyrics and my horrible singing voice. And these guys open up for us, and I was, like, just crestfallen.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely crestfallen that I had put up a stink that these guys should open up for us because we were the big band in town.
Right.
And it was just the worst. Yeah. But finding out about them and them opening up this whole door to me about how, you know, these other bands and how their like web kind of spread out into the world of music, which became, you know, Botch spawned, you know, Roy and mm-hmm. These Arms Are Snakes and right. Minus the Bear and all this stuff that just like kind of trickled out from all this stuff. And now, which is, you know, Narrows and, mm-hmm. and all that stuff. Russian circles.
Yep.
And it's just amazing. It's amazing how these guys, like such good players, such good songwriters are just going out all over the place.
Yeah.
And like, for lack of a better term, this is going to sound really gross, spreading their seed.
Yeah.
No, which some of them probably are on the road as well. But having the foresight,
mm-hmm.
if that's even a word, I can't even remember if that's an actual word or not. But seeing the talent in like a band like Minus the Bear and putting stuff like that out or just loving it so much that you put it out is a pretty cool thing, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, do you chalk that up to like being just kind of, you know, at that time, like being much more knowledgeable about what the scene is doing and stuff like that, or at that time, are you still just like, I like that, I'm gonna do this?
Yeah, I think that actually all came together through Aaron Tate.
I love Aaron. He's
the drummer.
A good dude.
Drummer.
Yeah.
At the time for Minus the Bear, he. He was working at a place this mailboxes, this place called Mailboxes, etc.
Right.
On the app.
He told me this story.
Yeah, yeah.
He was on this show. He actually told this story.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, yeah, he hit me with a demo. Jake wasn't even singing on it at the time. It was just like instrumental stuff. And that, you know, they said that they were going to get Jake, and I was a fan of Sharks Keep Moving.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just like, yeah, that would be rad. And it started, we were going to do a 7-inch, and then, you know, the more we talked about it, turned into an EP.
Yeah.
And then from there, I mean, that was just, you know, just at the time was considered a one-off release. But those guys just from the get-go were, you know, just some of the hardest workers that I've ever been around.
Such amazing musicians.
Amazing musicians, super professional, you know, and hardworking. And so it's just like, that makes them very easy to work with. And it makes you want to, like, you know, you obviously want people that are going to be working as hard as you are. So, it was a good fit.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So do you think it's possible now,
mm-hmm.
in the time that we're in now,
right,
to do something like you've done? Is that still possible without like a massive backing of money to get something started?
I definitely think it's possible. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just me, but I honestly feel like it might be a little bit easier just because of the technology advances that we've seen since I started doing it, you know, like
distribution's
obviously. Easier. Obviously the internet, you can discover things like, it's just like the snap of the fingers, you know?
Right.
Obviously before it was all word of mouth. Just like if you weren't out on the road, like, you know, touring with bands, or bands weren't relaying like, oh, I played with this cool band in Cleveland or something like that. You know, you should check them out. And like pass along a record or CD or cassette or whatever it might be. Now you can just, you know, like I said, be online doing research. You still have the same word of mouth stuff from the bands that you work with or friends that you've made. But, I just think it's, you know, you can do, there's tons of different ways that you can do a label. And,
but is it still something that can become lucrative, that you could sustain yourself on?
Yeah, I think so.
Really?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I think, I definitely believe that's possible. You know, but obviously,
because a lot of people, I mean, as we go forward in the internet age,
right,
and seeing what, like, you know, acts like Macklemore have been able to do,
mm-hmm.
like on their own,
right,
no label,
right,
self-release stuff,
mm-hmm.
that's got to be for a lot of bands, that's got to be pretty, you know, it's got to look pretty good,
right,
on that side of the fence.
Yeah. But I really think you need to have, you know, you need to have put in the work prior to just, yeah.
Oh, sure.
And I don't think that it's, I mean, I'm sure that it's appealing to some folks, but I don't think it's as appealing on a wide scale.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't feel like it is.
Yeah.
There's still people that, you know, don't want to come out of pocket to pay for the expenses necessary
to work a record
properly, and don't want to deal with it, like the day-to-day hassles.
And who knows, a guy like David, who knows the business.
Yeah. I mean, there's all sorts of, you know, like I said, there's all sorts of ways that you can run a label. I do believe that you can be successful and that it's something that you can sustain yourself off of.
Yeah.
Like you said, I mean, there are people like, oh, Macklemore, they, you know, he wants to do it himself. But I mean, it'd be interesting to see what that looked like if, you know, he didn't have management, or, you know, they didn't have, you know, their connection to Warner Music Group,
sure,
and the muscle that they bring to the team. It would definitely look a lot different.
Oh yeah. 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 For certain. So did you ever think you'd be in this position?
I mean, I hoped. It's just kind of, it's one of those things where it's just like, oh, I want to get to a point where, you know, I can run the label and I don't have to work a day job. And
yeah,
obviously when I got to that point, then it was just like, all right, let's see how long we can
do this.
Yeah, exactly. It's
either it'll go up or it'll just run itself into the ground.
Yeah, yeah. And there've been there've been tough times for sure. Yeah. But I mean, honestly, it's like, I'm thankful for what I do. And I wouldn't want to have it any other way.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great, man. Yeah. That's a great spot to end it. Congratulations on making it 20 years.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Here's to 20 years more.
Thank you.
Right?
Thank you. Yeah, exactly.
Excellent, man. David, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate
Thanks, Aaron.
It.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Wow. That was fantastic. We were having a little bit of an audio issue there that I noticed, so I apologize for that. There's nothing I could do to fix that. I'm going to have to invest in some new cords again. God damn it! Everything is falling apart. Everything. Health issues. House falling apart. Never buy a house from 1948. That was owned by a little old lady. Ever since then. Never buy a house. A house that was built. never mind. Never mind. You don't care. You don't give a shit. Let's just get this over with, right? The song that you heard in the middle there was Sunburnt by the band 764 Hero, which we were talking about. Dude, check this band out. Go, if you haven't heard of 764 Hero, please go back into their archives. They've got a bunch of stuff up on YouTube. People have put stuff on YouTube that you can listen to. Go and listen to this band. They were absolutely amazing. Definitely a huge integral part of the indie scene here in the Northwest. Sunburnt from the album We're Solids that was released in 1997. It was a split. It was released by Up Records and by Suicide Squeeze. So yeah, there you go. Let's see. Great chat with David Dickinson. That was absolutely fantastic. Big thanks to him. Big thanks to Nathan for setting it up, and Ellie who set that up. Just a great chat. So I hope you guys go out and get some of this re-release stuff that's coming out on Suicide Squeeze. Once again, they're celebrating their 20th anniversary this year. And man, that's huge. It's absolutely huge. Great job. Great job, David, and everybody that works there at Suicide Squeeze. You can subscribe to Air Raid on iTunes, and if you do, please take a moment to rate the show. We're available on the Stitcher, TuneIn, Cairo Radio, and the Spreaker apps for your mobile devices, or just visit our website at www.air-raid.net and subscribe directly to our RSS feed. Keep in touch by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/TheAirRaid Podcast, or follow us on Twitter at AirRaidNet, or email me directly, aaron@air-raid.net, just like Anna from Denmark did recently, okay? You can do that. And remember to take the pledge, folks. Take the pledge to tell somebody about the show. Tell your friends, your mother, your sister, your brother. We'll even take your cousins. Bring it up in conversation. Subscribe them to the show while they're not looking. That's how we grow. By nefarious means. We're going to go out this week with a wonderful and touching song that we talked about in this episode by the man, the myth, the legend, Elliott Smith. This one's called Division Day. It came out in 1997 off of Suicide Squeeze Records. This is going to be one that's re-released. So keep your eyes peeled for that. Like Suicide Squeeze on Facebook, follow their Twitter handle, and you can also visit their website at suicidesqueezerecords.net, I believe. We'll have the link up there. I don't know if that, this is a Tumblr page. suicidesqueezerecords.tumblr.com. So, do that. All right? Okay. Great stuff, man. Great stuff. Thank you guys so much for listening this week. It has been an absolute pleasure talking with you. And we'll see you next week with an all-new episode of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. We'll see you then, folks. Division Day by Elliott Smith. Have a good week. You don't know what you look like.